All right. So I guess let's go. Let's get started.
So actually, I just sent you like just a minute ago a PDF that I found online. You don't have to pull it up right now, but I thought you might find it interesting. It's from Mr. Bicep about a tour that he did of Lindos, which is just really weird. A muscle guy doing a walkthrough tour news article about a tech company.
Okay.
So,
I'm unfamiliar with who you're talking about, so.
yeah, I was unfamiliar with it. I just found this the other day, and I'm like, I have no idea who this guy is. But he calls himself Mr. Bicep, which made me laugh. So, okay,
I know
let
there
me
were
go on.
I mean there were tours happening all the time, so
Yeah.
come
Okay,
people
so
coming
let
through and
me
watch looking at
get
the office,
my
checking it out. It's a pretty nice building, actually.
thing started. So, okay, I am recording. Jeff, do you have your recording going?
Just a second. I now have my recording going.
Okay. Yep, I'm getting good levels.
Scribbles. You know I had to sneak at least one in there, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. Okay, so Chris, just like before, I'll do a countdown from five. You just chime in when you think I'm going to say two and one. That'll give me a spot to be able to sync up all the audio,
All right.
and then we'll jump into it.
Okay.
Five, four, three, two,
Two,
one.
one.
All right. Okay, Jeff, so since I know what your favorite distribution is, and I know how much you love it, I thought it would be kind of fun to revisit it. Someone that we both know, that we have met and hung out with at Southeast Linux Fest, has some experience with that distribution and that company.
Am I going to
So,
enjoy this talk?
oh, you are going to love this talk. You're
Okay.
going to love it. So I thought when I did an interview with Chris before, it kind of came up after our interview just in chat. And so we had probably about a 10-minute discussion, just kind of discussing the Lindos, Linspire issue, the company, the saga. And there were some interesting things that he knew because Chris spent some time there. So
Okay.
I thought it would be interesting to kind of just ask some questions and talk about it because there's a lot of contention around Lindos and Linspire. And I think sometimes they get some undue hate. I think some of it may be justified. But one of the things that I do respect for the company is that, of course, they were making an attempt. It might have not been the best attempt, but they were making an attempt. And you know,
It's like
like
that
all
misshapen star meme, at least you tried or something.
right, yeah. And you know, and like all things in life, there's good and bad aspects. So I thought we
Right.
could it'd be just interesting to kind of dig into. Since I know you are such a fan. And by the way, for anyone listening, that is severe sarcasm. Jeff loathes.
So I'll just say my loathing has tempered since the earlier days because it's been so long since I've interacted with it.
I have to say there was always a lot of hatred towards Lindows and Linspire from hardcore Linux users. That's for sure.
So I get, yeah. So Chris, I guess the simplest place to start is like, how did you get linked up with them? And I mean, there was it just some random thing, or did you actually go looking for it? Did you just happen to bump into that they were looking for people?
Yeah, sort of. So I wanted to work on making Linux and free software easier to use, and they were one of the first. They were one of the only companies that were really putting energies into that. It wasn't so much, they actually had made a lot of bad choices, and it was a particular individual I would mostly blame for that. And it was the end of the company also. It's the reason the company went under. Basically, I mean, I can tell you some things that are like people would be like, why would you do that?
Please do. Please do.
The root they changed it so that you would have to be root to like you would log in as default on root. And if you understand the logic, I get the logic, but yeah, it was dumb. Basically, Windows 98 was the thing at that point still, and or some Windows 9X series, and that was how Windows was. So like they were trying to make it easy because people didn't understand the concept of like usernames and administration and stuff like that. So I mean, The problem is that Windows XP was like right around the corner, or was our, maybe it was even out. I don't even remember. But it was like, this is dumb because we know this is not what people are going to. Everybody has to move to this system anyway, because Microsoft is anyway. So why would you go like backwards when you know what's coming? So like that was just one example of like why. There were some other things that they did that were like, you know, they got criticism for. But you know, I will have to say though, when I was working there, you weren't defaulted to root. So most of those issues were actually fixed before I ever started, you know, started at Linspire. So, but
what year did you start at Linspire?
So it meant 2005, I think. Okay. No, I'm sorry, so not 2005. Maybe it was. Yeah, maybe 2005, 2006, sometime around there. Yeah, 2005. That's
about when I started falling off of Slashdot. Before, it was like a regular punching bag on Slashdot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then out of that time is when it started slipping off, I think, because they started cleaning themselves up.
So interestingly enough, some of what happened was most of the stuff people bash Linspire about was actually happened under Windows, and under Michael Robertson. And he's basically the one to blame for like root and for like a lot of the proprietary components that were in it and just a bunch of different things. And actually under Kevin Carmody, and I don't know if this happened before or after Kevin Carmody became the CEO, but he basically he was basically offered the position, but his condition of accepting it was that he had to actually be in charge. So he said there's gonna be changes, and some of those changes were things I believe like the root thing, and they released a full set of source code for all of their in-house developed applications. So like a lot of the things that people like, you know, criticize them for, they actually got undone by Linspire 5.0, which was by far the best version. But yeah, it certainly didn't. Unfortunately, because of certain things that happened a little later, you know, within the next 2 years, Michael Robertson made some decisions that, again, basically he took money from the company that he shouldn't have, and through improper channels or improper means. So there were shareholders in the company. They were very, very small ownership, basically, of the company, but they existed and they were the employees. So the problem is when you take effectively monies and you don't do it through proper channels like dividends and things like that, you're gonna piss a lot of your employees off. And so that's basically what happened. And yeah, let's just put it this way. The company basically went under because of that. And it wasn't because they were financially, like, it was a financial issue. There was actually some contracts that never got filled and would have like increased probably the profits by at least tenfold for the company. But because those contracts didn't get filled because they lost their employees, basically. That's basically the real reason why the company went under. It had to do with the fact that they went from 70 employees in like 2005 to 20 in 2000. By 2007, it was 20 employees, and they did need to reduce their employee count. I will say, I think 70 was there was. I remember working there, and I'm like, why do you need so many people? And I'm just like, there were some things I needed to do differently, but like, they still had a business model that actually was going to work. So it wasn't really the business model that failed. It was just really stupid decisions by people at the top, basically. And in the end, it was, I actually turned down a job because originally when I was working there for them for a little bit, it was just over the summer, because I was doing an internship, but I was offered a job twice. I turned down the first one because I wanted to finish school. And then the second time I turned it down because I'm like, this is not going to work. Like I went out and I flew out to San Diego to interview with them for like the second time in 2007. And I interviewed, they offered me the job. And all the back of my head, I'm thinking, this isn't going to work out. Like I'm going to have this job for like 8 months, maybe 6 to 8 months, something like that. And then the company's going to go under. And the people basically who were working there at that point, I won't name names, but the people who were working there still were like, they didn't have the people to actually develop the product. And they also didn't have people in charge at that point who were competent to do what needed to get done. So the guy who basically took over was, I can't remember his name off the top of my head actually. So it's actually, I can't really name him, but, he was basically in charge of the business. He was like the business, I'm trying to think what that department was called, but it's the business people, the sales people, whatever, something like that. Uh-huh. And, basically he just didn't have the competency. Like he was already making, like, he's probably the reason they did the root thing and some of these other things. Like, so anyway, yeah. So I was like, okay, all right. They offered me a nice salary, especially at a school, but I was like, let me push this because I don't really want to go and work for them anyway at this point. So I'm like, so I pushed it and they were like, yeah, we can't afford it. And it's like, and I kind of figured that was probably going to be the case. So I kind of sort of turned the job. I mean, I did ultimately turn the job down, I guess, because I could have said, okay, I'll take what you offered previously, because they did already say, you know, I had the job, but it wasn't going to be for, there was no way they were going to give me more than what their maximum was for that position that they were willing to pay. So I turned it down. I ultimately turned the job down at that point a second time. So
mm-hmm. It was good timing too, because it was not much longer after that.
It was actually like exactly. They survived exactly how long I figured they would, and they never did get somebody to like fill that position that they were trying to hire me for. So, there was no way. I mean, they were going to go under because there's no, you can't keep a company going when you don't have the people to fill the contracts and to do what it takes to expand. Mm-hmm. So basically what was working for them financially, it didn't work at the level that they were doing it, especially if you were to take away the money from the company that they needed to operate. And so there was kind of a two-parter here. So one, Michael Robertson basically took away the money that was needed to operate, and two, people left, so they couldn't fulfill the contracts that would be needed in order to expand what was called CNR, Click and Run, from being a Linspire specific thing to being something that actually ran on Canonical or Ubuntu. And as we all know, Ubuntu grew really, really fast, really, really quick. And if they had actually gotten CNR into Canonical and into Ubuntu, there would have been no problem, even with having taken the money. But because they took the money and they lost their critical employees, there was just no way. And one guy is not going to fix, you know, one guy is not going to fix that problem in 6 to 8 months. So there was like, I was like, yeah, I definitely needed a bit more money in order to make it worth my time and effort to go out there, because it was like, I know this isn't going to last. This is like, I mean, and it's crazy because they were around long enough to like, to do everything they needed to do. And one of the other things I've noticed about, and this is like a very much a startup culture, and but what I realized is that like they're hopping from thing to thing to thing. Like they never really knew what they were doing. And it's like, I was in there 2 years prior. I knew what they needed to do. They never did it. They didn't want to go in that direction. And it was just the whole thing was, and I never pushed it, but like I talked to other employees and be like, well, why are you guys not doing this? Why is this not happening? And I got answers, and it was like, oh yeah, this is like, okay, I get it. That's not the business model you're trying to focus on, but like I was kind of felt like this is where they needed to go. And my feeling was always that they needed to go more in more take a little bit of an Apple and a combination of Apple and Dell approach. So yeah, Dell. So Dell went from a model where they sold everything in like through computer retailers back in like the, I don't know exactly what time frame it was, but sometime between the late 90s and early 2000s, I think it was. But they went from basically from a model where they sold through retailers, like physical brick and mortar retailers, and they switched over to radio, phone and internet catalog sales. So basically they didn't have any physical stores where you could walk into, and it worked really well. That was actually when they were at the very top of their game. And my opinion was that what Linspire needed to do was basically copy that, but also do a little bit of what Apple did, in that they kind of had the whole product catalog. They had the whole solution for you. And it wasn't so much that they had to go exclusively like their own product, but it had to be the core of their focus in order to provide the level of usability and support of the market that they were targeting, which was non-technical users. So they didn't want to do that, but the reality is they would have needed probably like two or three people at most. And when you have 70 people, it's kind of like, okay, let's get rid of like 90% of these people, but let's have two or three people. You know, we only have five developers as it is, right? Five or six developers as it is in the company of 70. So Yeah, you're cringing.
That seems like an awfully low ratio.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That I don't think that included the QA team. But like, yeah, I mean, so, and they didn't include like support, but I wouldn't have considered support developers either anyway, given that they don't program. But yeah, I mean, there were a little bit fewer technical people in the company than that, but it wasn't like a lot of technical people. It was like, a lot of it was like, I don't even know. It was like marketing. Like they had a lot of, I mean, between marketing and business, and they just had all these different departments, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, I understand having a PR person and I understand having human resources, but like, do you need two or three human resources people? Do you need two or three accountants? Do you need, it's just like the whole thing just, it added up, and it was like, you need to keep it small until you get to a point where you can afford that number of people. And eventually I think they realized that. But yeah, they probably should have. What's that?
Too late, perhaps.
Yeah. They were a little bit late in figuring that out. But yeah, I mean, they did do some smart things too. Like, they got Microsoft to sue them. I got to give them credit for that. And that was Michael Robertson. So it was his idea, basically. And basically what happened there was, so to back up, Michael Robertson started out with $5 million put into this company. Okay. And basically what he did was he named it Windows because he had an inkling that Microsoft would sue over the trademark. And the thing is, Windows is not trademarkable because it is effectively there's X Windows. There's lots of windowing environments that were called Windows effectively that were not Microsoft Windows. So even that predate Microsoft Windows. And so there was plenty of evidence to show that this is not like a valid trademark. And the thing is, Microsoft isn't going to want to lose the trademark on Windows. So they're going to settle, and you know they're going to settle. So that was basically the whole idea. And basically that's what went down exactly as you would have thought. So they ended up walking away with $20 million from that settlement. And that's where Linspire got basically most of its cash to make it work. And that's why they were actually around a while, you know, all things considered, considering how many times they managed to kind of mess things up a bit. But if it wasn't for that,
I think there's some degree of a company looks a certain way. So when someone comes in, the business people come in, well, we're supposed to have a PR person in the backend. We're supposed to have three HR people. We're supposed to have five QA member team members and three janitors and whatever. This is what a company looks like.
Yeah,
and a lot of startups that are having success, the guy that knows the business stuff comes in and starts hiring people, and you're like, we don't need three PR people. We need three more developers. Can you not see how many tickets we've got?
Yeah.
It seems like that happens a lot. Happens there at Linspire.
That's exactly how I felt. You know, that's what I saw and I thought was going down, basically. I mean, and they were throwing good money at like things that were like, you know, I don't know if this is the best use of the money. You know, a lot of companies will do things like they'll throw a lot of money at conferences, going to conferences. And it's like, and don't get me wrong, I'm a habitual when it comes to going to conferences and having Think Penguin there. Right. That's my company. But like at the end of the day, that's not money. That's not going to bring you money. That's a loss. That's not a revenue generator. And so
hold on, Chris. I do have to disagree with you once there because
okay.
I bought a little MP3 player from you guys at a conference. So you made at least $100 off of going to a conference.
Yeah.
I don't know how much more money you made.
For the $3,000-$6,000 that we might have spent to go to it.
Yeah.
And that was the bare minimum that you can like manage to get into a conference and get a booth, right? So
yeah.
Anyway, Linspire went way farther than that. They actually started their own conference effectively, and it was jokingly referred to as the Windows conference or the Linspire conference. And yeah, so and think about it this way. They basically paid for that whole thing, right? So that's a ton of money, right? And at the end of the day, especially the first handful of conferences, and I didn't go to those, but those were mostly like just different Linspire products, and they weren't even necessarily like good products necessarily. Like they weren't fully developed. Let's put it that way. And a lot of those products never even got fully developed. That's the funny thing. Like a lot of them, it was just like, oh, we're going to throw our Linspire logo on an AOL dialer that somebody else wrote. And then like call it the Windows dialer or whatever. Right. And don't get me wrong. Lindos and Linspire probably did need to do some of that work, but I don't necessarily know they need to rebrand every application Linspire and then like come out with a press release for it. And so the whole thing was...
Well, they had all those marketing people that needed to do something.
Well, right. Exactly. So they were really, in some respects, they were really good at marketing. I just don't know they needed to do throw quite as much money at marketing as, you know, they did relative to, right. I don't know, like development and so on. But I mean, again, they did throw money at like other things that I don't want to say, you know, maybe if there was an unlimited amount of cash and you could keep going for the next 25 years, it maybe would have worked. Okay. So one of the things they did was they threw a ton of money, millions of dollars at the wine project. And I don't know if people remember this, but the idea that Michael Robertson had was, well, we'll just turn it into Windows by adding Windows support. And so like, but that was never going to work. So they finally realized that. And then they started funding like actual Linux development of Linux apps. Right. So there was like Elphoto and LTunes. And as you might notice, they're copying Apple here a little bit. And so they had this whole suite. And when Linspire 5 came out, it wasn't actually finished. So the press CDs, if you installed it, like it didn't work. The applications didn't even really work. But because of CNR, they got updated in the background. So as long as people updated, you know, the programs did work, but there was still very basic in functionality. And they never really got, unfortunately, because the company never really survived much longer than that. Now there was a 5.1 and a 5.5 release. 5.1 was basically just Linspire 5.0 with kernel updates, which actually broke some stuff, by the way, which is kind of humorous. Which was really kind of critical at the time, like having actual Windows support, like running, being able to run it. I think it was like Win for Lin. Yeah, Win for Lin was the name of the app. But it was like some of the
apps, I remember that one. Yeah,
right.
That was very widely panned. We'll just say.
Anyway, yeah. So like some of the things that like their operating system kind of needed in order to make it work, they kind of broke between 5.0 and 5.1, and it wasn't the only thing that they had broken. And it was like there was other things they broke. I'm trying to think what some of them were. But like hardware. They were constantly breaking hardware, and it was like, and they were giving people bad advice. And it's like, this is not the way to do business. This is not the way to make this work. And they didn't have the people there who really understood Linux. And when your intern is being, when other employees are telling your intern, how do you know so much? And like, they're looking up to the intern, you got yourself a problem. And that's kind of what the whole Linspire saga was about. They didn't really have a good set of employees. And I will say, one of the developers actually went on to work for Canonical, and all I had to do was cringe, because like this guy was like going around and, oh, some of the things he said, I was just always like, I was so cringing over. But he did eventually go to work for Canonical, and he's the guy who basically was behind Click and Run. And I would have done Click and Run a little bit differently too. But anyway, yeah, the whole thing is interesting.
Is it fair to say that it was a comedy of errors?
Yeah, definitely. You could definitely make a comedy about Linspire. It was just so stereotypical startup and doing everything wrong that they possibly could. And it's like, there was so much potential, but they just ruined all of the potential and nosedived right into the cliff.
More than anything else, I know I have a lot of complaints about some of the engineering and the functionality that we've talked about already. But I always felt like Linspire was positioning itself to be the Linux for the everyman, and here they were fumbling the experience so often. Like, this is what people think Linux is. This is setting us up, the rest of us that are not using Linspire but are using Linux. It's kind of setting the tone against us. And there was even some discussion on Slashdot, is this a false flag? I'm like, they're really trying to be bad because they're trying to ruin Linux. I mean, they're even named after Lindows, so is there an association? Look, Microsoft did give them $20 million.
I can
see how this
I can tell you a little bit about that. So one of the developers, I had a conversation with one of the developers at Linspire when I was working there. And what he said to me, I was just like, are you serious? He didn't care at all about Linux. His thing was on creating an operating system, but it wasn't Linux. Like, he did not give two, I don't know what if I can curse on this show, but he did.
You can.
Yeah. He did not give two shits about Linux, right? Like, his whole thing was like, Apple this, Apple that. And it, the whole thing was just like, it was so embarrassing. It was like, now he wasn't saying this publicly, but it was just like, oh my God, like, how is this supposed to work? You don't understand enough about what needs to be done to make Linux work. You're basically taking Linux and like trying to make it easier to use. And in some areas, you've actually done kind of what needed to be done. Like the main thing that Linspire brought to the table was a lot of tweaking and a lot of user interface development as far as installing applications. So it wasn't the only thing. Like they did do some other things. Like they developed a DVD playback software. At the time, DVD playback was, you know, and it's an Apple product. I don't know Apple. iPod was a thing that was right. Coming out. So like there were a lot of little things that they did, but you know, there was actual code being developed and contributions being made. So like there is stuff like even to this day that you can still find in your typical distribution that you can credit Linspire for. But yeah, it's there's just a lot of little things. But yeah, one of the things they did that I cringed at was they didn't understand, like, if you tell people to go buy hardware that works with your operating system and then they have to upgrade once a year, right? When they upgrade, the hardware needs to continue to work. And the problem is they were creating these things called hard. And I've always been a critic of hardware databases ever since this time period at a minimum. Mm-hmm. It's probably about the time I realized that this is not going to work. But basically, when you create these hardware databases, they don't work because just going and testing hardware and saying, oh, this works in you know, Linspire 5, that doesn't mean it's going to work in Linspire 5.1 when they go to not even a whole different version, but even the same version effectively, because 5.1 is still 5.0. It just has a kernel update basically. But 5.1, I mean, there might be some other things, but mostly it was a kernel update. But when you go to update to 5.1 and it breaks your dial-up modem, which was common at that point still, it was like 30% of the population, that's a problem. You can't go telling somebody once a year or more than once a year that they have to go and replace their modem. So anyway, that was one of the other issues that always drove me nuts. It's like, this isn't gonna work, guys. And there's some other things that were like, that were really crazy about Linspire. Like, and I get why they were going this route kind of, but I also realized that it wasn't necessary and it also wasn't working. So like they went and they had relationships with primarily two smaller, outlets, Micro Center and Fry's. So they basically had computers, Lindos computers or Linspire computers, in these, you know, outlets, right? The problem here is that when your computer is $200 and it's utter garbage with no matter what operating system is on, actually it ran better with Linspire maybe, but it still was garbage. What do you think? And you're not making any money on it, right? What do you think the companies are going to do? They're not going to sell Linspire. That's what they're getting you to draw you in, because they're not paying the licensing fee. So they just save themselves $30. But once they get in the store, they're upselling, all right? And they're upselling, and I had already worked in retail, so like I already understood how this all worked. They're upselling to something more expensive. And that's exactly what they did. And so there wasn't even like a user base as a result of that. Their user base was like people installing Linspire themselves. And it's like, if you can install Linspire yourself, if you're at least that competent, I'm pretty confident you're competent enough to order from, you know, over the phone or, you know, online. And that's why I was always like, the way this is, you know, being done is just all wrong. And I was actually I developed an application for them to basically do the very thing that I'm like, this isn't going to work, guys. But I did that application to test the hardware to determine whether or not it would be supported. And I put supported in quotes, but just the fact that you can communicate with a dial-up modem does not mean the dial-up modem is actually properly supported. And so therein lies the problem with writing an application to test whether or not something is supported. Anyway, the whole thing was just, yeah, it had bad written all over it. But then the other thing they did was even actually made things even worse, is that they added support for proprietary software dependent products, hardware products. So like products that, you know, we're not going to work tomorrow. And also they added support for products that were like that were like, there was like a proprietary component, but the proprietary component would only give them half the performance, but then you would have to like upgrade to like the full support. And I don't even know if that was available. It might have just the whole thing was just, it was such a nightmare. If anything, I would have been like, let's remove all the proprietary stuff. Let's not give people the illusion this stuff is going to work, and let's tell them to go and buy this hardware, but actually make sure it's going to work and be like, yeah, we guarantee this to work, you know, down the 5 years down the road, it's going to continue working. That would have been my approach. And I kind of took that approach after I left Linspire, actually, because I started a company to do just that. Just, it wasn't focused on Linspire specifically, because I saw the need in the market and I was like, this is what Linspire should have been doing. I can't do the whole distribution and this, but I can do that one part of it. And so that's where I was like, let me just do that, because it's going to make a lot more money. It's going to make sense. It's going to, you know, financially it's going to work. And ultimately it did. I mean, we're 12 years now on operations, and you know, the company's been doing well ever since almost day one. I mean, it did take us like 3 years to really get off the ground, but yeah, I mean, it was still,
it's amazing what happened when you're a company that focuses on providing customers with something good, and then actually being able to develop a customer base that will be willing to actually return and give you more money in the future. Like, amazing business plan. Why has no one thought of this before?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it costs 10 times as much to get a new customer as it does to keep an existing one. So if you've gone through the process and you've actually captured the customer, you'd be able to in your power to keep them, because that's the revenue stream.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing people have to, is the thing I also get, you know, I get people like criticizing, and it's like, one of the things, and I'm not talking about like people outside of, a given company or my company or anything like that. I'm just talking about people like inside. It's like, and the thing I think employees sometimes don't understand is that you can't cater to everybody, right? If you try catering to everybody, you're going to go under, but you can cater to a certain market. And so you're always going to get slack, you know, from, you know, critics and whatever. And so oftentimes those are just your competitors anyway, right? But you're going to get that slack, and that's okay. I mean, you don't have to own the market. You can have competition. There's nothing wrong with competition. And I think that's one of the reasons too, like, you know, we've done just fine. You know, we've done well, because it's a situation where it's like, and I'm talking about ThinkPenguin, not Linspire here, but We've done fine. We've done well, because we're not trying to solve everybody's problem. We're trying to solve the masses' problem, you know, but I don't necessarily. And yeah, sure, we solve a lot of, you know, problems for, you know, more experienced users too, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the case that you have to buy every single, if you're a technical user and you want to buy from other parties, go for it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. We don't have to solve every problem. We don't have to, you know, and we do solve a lot of problems. Like, we sell parallel port cards, right? And we don't sell many of them, but we sell them. But the point is that, like, we don't have to sell, you know, we don't have to sell every single niche product that's out there in order to make Linux and free software work for the majority. And we don't. We solve as many problems as we can, as many problems as there's enough demand for, and we have time and resources to solve, but we don't go over, you know, over what we can achieve resource wise because that would be the end of us, if you expand too many resources. And that's why you can make a small company work, is you just can't go wasting money on, you know, PR people. And you can't go, I mean, that's not to say that maybe you can have a PR, you know, outsource your PR team or something, but like, there's ways to get around some of these problems. And if you do that, then things work. But if you have to, you know, make your company 70 people and, you know, hire, take everybody in house just to, you know, put on a show, and you're not ready to put that show on, yeah, you're going to go under.
So there's two things you've said so far that really jump out to me. One is when you were talking about how they kind of leapt from thing to thing, hopped from idea to idea. And also when you were talking about how, you know, it's beneficial to cater to like a specific market, because I was doing some research online.
Yeah, know your customer.
Yeah. And I found some information about the different hardware systems, the computers that they tried to sell. Like, they tried to sell a web station, which was, of course, all the rage that everyone was going to use that in the future.
It was really cringeworthy.
Yeah, they were going to try to sell one of those. They had just their standard desktop PC. They then had a laptop that they were trying to do. And then they also had a media system, like a media station, media center. And it's like, they, again, literally trying to cover every possible idea that was like out there in the early 2000s of, yes, we're just going to do it all, instead of finding one and going, okay, we want to do this really well. They ended up kind of doing everything very badly. And on the hardware front, the other thing that jumps out at me is, you know, the support, you know, you were talking about, you know, your modem would go down when you'd update, which is even more hilarious to me because if my memory serves correctly, they were selling access to updated packages for like a yearly subscription, which you could only get, obviously, if you could get online, which having internet access to your network card or your modem, kind of an important thing to be able to get the uploaded, the updated stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back now what the story was with that. So there was a Lins, I think it was Linspire Pro, and then there was Linspire, but there was also like, so here's the thing, they did a lot of hopping around. So at different points they were doing different things, and at one point, I think you're absolutely 100% right, they did come out with something called FreeSpire right around the time 5.0 came out, which was basically it was basically Linspire, but I'm trying to think if there was, it was without the proprietary components at first for like media codecs and things, and like I'm trying to think what else it didn't have. It was almost identical except for a few licensed third-party license components, but then they actually were able to release that as well, with like FreeSpire 6.1 maybe or something like that. And so in the end, they actually literally were giving away the full product. It just, it had a different name, but it was too late at that point. They were already on the downhill side of things. I was literally there at the height of the company. And I saw it coming. I mean, I could say I could see where they were doing things wrong. I can't say I could see the downfall because they hadn't actually taken some of the steps that they needed to crash yet. Mm-hmm. But 2 years later, they had definitely taken all those steps. So
you as an intern coming in and you don't have a business background, you haven't done this, you're just a kid. I don't know how old you were when you joined them.
I probably had a better business background or more knowledge when it came to the business side of things than the business guy who was in charge of the business department there.
I'm gathering that, which is probably also a big contributor to why Think Penguin has so much success.
Yeah.
So clearly you have a background, you've got acumen in this. And it's not like, oh, they should have listened to me, but you know, there's an age difference there. And this guy probably is, Michael Robertson, who probably started and had some success selling off other companies, and so he thought he knew what he was doing. There's a lot of people that don't have enough background in software, especially open source software. It's one thing to step in and try and make software and sell software. There's nothing tangible to grasp. So a lot of people that are used to making widgets and they come into the software world and just it's not the same. And it doesn't really add up for them. Or I work for a company where a gentleman was invited to come in. He had a background of success. He helped turn around some restaurants that were failing and had some pretty big success stories after he came to help them. So with these notches on his belt, he came in to help with the software company, and it was a disaster because he had no background in it. So one wonders if Michael Robinson or some of the other gentlemen and ladies that were doing this, leading the company, thought it would be okay. This is what you do. This works in other companies. If we do it, we'll have success too.
So Michael Robertson, his background was effectively right timing and luck, I think, is what it came down to. So I don't know what you know about Michael Robertson, but he basically was the founder. I think he was the founder and CEO of, like, 99% sure he was, of MP3.com. And everybody knows MP3. Anybody who was around at the time, way back in the day, knew MP3.com. So it was just kind of luck that led him to where he was with the money that he had in order, which led him to investing in all sorts of things. I don't know if any of those things are around today. I don't believe that any of them are, actually. So it just goes to show he didn't really have, I think, the business skills. Now, I don't know where he is financially, but he was, even at that time, he was basically very wealthy and very poor. And he was going back and forth between those two, being very poor and very wealthy. So clearly there was something he wasn't doing quite right. And I think we could see a bit of that. And certainly there's going to be, you know, when you're doing something new, doing something risky, there's going to be a risk and you could lose out. I mean, it's not like, mm-hmm. it's not always assured. However, he did it wrong every single time, it appears. So yeah. There was a professional team that took over. So he did do at least one thing right. After, you know, he left as CEO, but then he did other things a couple years later that were wrong and, yeah.
Legally wrong. Very clearly immoral.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lawsuit and everything actually, later on too, mm-hmm. about, because when people left, well, at one point when people, some people were, well, so it was a little complicated, but when money was taken from the company and people were, I don't know if it was a little before this or, but people basically at some point there were people being let go and no. I think this was this was more towards the end, I think. People were being let go. They were giving severances. And that's when Kevin Carmody. No, they were reducing. I think what it started at was they were reducing their employee count. And so Kevin Carmody gave people severances because they were letting them go. But it was the way the whole thing unfolded that they lost their employees that they actually needed in the process. So
mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah. So I looked it up. Robinson was the guy behind MP3.com.
Oh yeah, I was 100% sure of that. Yeah, he had some other ventures too.
Yeah, very early when I first heard about Lindo's, I had a couple thoughts in my head. One was, of course, once the lawsuit happened, did he intentionally choose that name just to get sued so he could get a lot of money?
He did.
So he wouldn't have to go the venture capital route and be actually liable to anybody for actually doing something with their money.
That's brilliant, by the way. That's just really brilliant and devious. I like that kind of thinking.
Yeah, me too.
The other thing I wondered was whether or not he was trying to do a similar thing, where it's put a lot of money into a company, make it look good, make some splash, make it flashy, because it kind of had a vibe to me.
Yeah.
Like they were trying to rip off the Sun Microsystems vibe. And like, look at us, we're high tech, we have all these cool designs, we're doing things edgy, and then flip the company and then sell it to somebody else.
It was definitely a startup vibe. It was definitely a flip the company kind of vibe, I think. And it's probably what he was going for. And he did at various points, I think, say he was going to try and sell the company. So I think there is his own words to back that up that you can probably find here or there. And if not in print, then certainly in people who have worked for him. So.
Yeah, I've thought about actually reaching, like trying to track him down and reaching out to see if he would do an interview about it. But Michael Robinson is actually a very common name in the U.S.
It is. So
it's actually really difficult to find just one in a haystack. I mean, maybe one day I'll actually be able to find a connection to him.
If any of you know Michael Robinson or know a way to reach him or could do some sleuthing, then maybe reach out to him and pass him on one of these episodes. And maybe he'll be incensed enough to talk to us and want to defend himself or something. I would love that. To talk with him would be marvelous.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to pick his brain.
I might want to have Chris back on again when we do it, just to have a. I don't like face you two off,
well,
but
I don't know. Let's not create a war here. You know.
All right, you're right. I'm not trying to create war. I think it'd be very dramatic to have a discussion with him and kind of ask him.
So you
might obviously had ideas for why he was doing things. So. Yeah.
So you might not know Chris, but I know after the lawsuit there was some time that went by, and then there was that partnership that happened between
Zandros,
Lindo's, and Microsoft.
Do
you know, was that related to the settlement? Like, was that one of those things of like, okay, we're gonna pay you off and then we're gonna do something later? Or was there actually like genuinely they actually came to common ground? Because that never made
that
sense.
That happened later, and I don't recall the details of what there that I think that happened. I wasn't around when that happened, I think that happened later. And I think that was like they did that with a bunch of different companies. And I don't know exactly what the benefit was to Linspire. I'm not entirely sure. The impression that I got was like there was going to be some sort of collaboration with like maybe I'm trying to think maybe like I want to say ActiveX, not ActiveX. What's their login stuff?
Active Directory.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm thinking. It had something to do probably with like Active Directory and some of those other components to make it integrate better with a network. And I know there was even before I think I went to work for Linspire, there was some of that going on to try to integrate it. But one of the problems is that was all proprietary basically. And so that in order to interoperate with you know, a network like a business network, typically that was kind of iffy. And there was some reverse engineering went on. There was a law. I think there was a lawsuit at some point. I can't recall the details of any of that, but I actually know the person who worked on like Samba. I'm still working with him today.
That's Luke, right?
Yeah. That's Luke.
I know Luke. Luke's a good guy.
Yeah. So, So there was definitely some of that, and some of that was, Zandros actually. I remember them doing some of that, and I don't think Linspire really ever got anywhere with any of that, but there was a relationship between Linspire and Zandros that didn't work out too. There was a lot of things that didn't work out at Linspire. I have to say that was just like, oh man, there's so many stories, and it wasn't even like they were around that long, but there's a lot of stories. So yeah,
now some of that was Windows also, because they had the antitrust lawsuit that hit them in the late 90s, and then right as George Bush becomes president, somehow magically the lawsuit gets settled, but there was still trickling out of, well, Microsoft had to be kinder, friendlier, smarter, and cuddly. And so they would make partnerships, very splashy public partnerships with things that would make them look like they're actually reaching out and being kind to other companies and other businesses, even competitors. So I recall, this may have just been scuttlebutt at the time, but there was some of the relationship between Linspire and Windows towards the end before it was purchased by Zandros was some of that Windows and Microsoft is making nice. Again, I don't know if that's true or not, but it seemed like there was some smoke there. And by then, I was just more or less tuned out. I was like, I've formed my opinion. I don't need to hear any more news about it. I'm done.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I don't really know what to say. I mean, it was, maybe there was some sort of media component relation to that too. I'm not really sure. They had everything they needed for like the consumer market, I think. It was mostly probably like the business environment where it was a little bit on the weaker side. But remote administration, like Zandros had a remote administration component to it. But Linspire, Windows and Zandros got into a fight, and Zandros supposedly didn't come through with some contractual obligations. And so then Windows sued Zandros, and then Zandros in the end bought what was left of Linspire effectively. And then they and Zandros folded because that was a bad move. I was like, what are you guys doing? Do you really think that there's anything left of of Linspire worth buying? They hadn't developed anything for a year. They were dead. Actually, what's funny is there's somebody bought the remaining assets to Zandros and Linspire, and then they came out with like FreeSpire 9.0 or something like that in the last couple of years.
Right. It was early 2018.
It's like the
name popped up again on my radar. I'm like, why? Oh no, it's back.
So the funny story about that, I reached out to the guy because he's selling commercial licenses for Linspire 7. And so I reached out to him going, talk to me about this. Like, what does this money get me? I'm interested. And I never heard back from the guy. And I'm like, come on, man, somebody like contacts you, hypothetically going to give him money. Like, he had pictures that were like physical boxes. And I'm like, dude, if he's got a physical box, like actual box, even if it's just a USB stick inside, like, I will totally buy it off him for my collection just to have it, because why not? But he's like, I never heard from him again. And it's like, what's going on here? You should think I want to give you money. So talk to me. But yeah, I haven't heard anything.
You know too much. You're not you're not able to be swindled by the charlatan.
Yeah. I have to say, I actually tried to buy the domain name when it was expiring because they like let it lapse. And I threw $500 at it because I'm like, hey, if I can own the company that I went to work for in my youth that then collapsed, that would be like just the ultimate, collector's item for somebody who worked at a company that he then. What's funny is that's the only company I ever actually like really worked for with like a professional job, like a real job. And it's really kind of funny because it's like I've not really ever had a job where I wasn't really working for myself as a result of that. So
you got a good track record, so I think keep doing what you're doing, seriously.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm curious, what was the version of Linspire that we unfortunately tried last year?
Oh, that was not unfortunate, Jeff. That was very fortunate. So I actually got those boxes out.
I knew you would have it ready. I saw them in the background. I just wanted to give you the opening for it.
Keep it in mind, this is almost 15 years later? So
the whole point is we want to crash and burn, run installing things. And we crashed and burned on almost everything accept Inspire.
Yeah, Jeff thought it was going to be a train wreck, and it was actually the only thing he managed to install that night and actually worked.
It was probably
Slackware installed. So okay, it wasn't the only thing.
You did a newer copy of Slackware, not the old one I wanted to give you.
Okay.
But if I had to guess,
it was probably Linspire 5.
Linspire 5.0.
I was spot on. This is the version that I actually have that actually works pretty well.
Yeah, it did work now. Now, you might not know the answer, and if you don't, that's fine.
Wait a minute. So your criticisms were probably harsher than they should have been because you need to update and you can't update because the apps were broken when they shipped, but they weren't broken when people actually got them in practice. So, but you would have been gotten like a beta version basically of the Linspire operating system.
That may be the answer to my next question because for the people that are listening, it's a Linspire retail box. It's 5.0 and it's blue.
I also have
a Linspire green 5.0 that like has lots of branding about the click and run. Like, is the newer click and run box, like, is that like the, okay, we fixed the crap and the blue one is the, we shipped the crap, or
is the green box 5.1?
I don't think so. Let me look for a version. There is no version. Hold on. Wait, looking.
The blue box is definitely 5.0.
The plot thickens. No version.
They're both 2005. There is not a version listed anywhere. Let me actually open up and see if I can find a version on something on the inside.
That rattling you hear, he's literally opened the box. Yeah. He had them ready. I knew he was going to try and ambush me, so I tried to pop the bubble before.
Yeah, okay,
so
anyway, basically, I remember somebody doing a retroactive review of either, I don't know if it was Linspire, it was probably Linspire, it was probably the one you did, and I'm thinking in the back, I don't know if I actually watched the video or if I just, you know, saw the title or what, but all I remember thinking was, yeah, that's probably going to be a really bad review because you can't apply the updates that were needed in order to make it work. I think I know what it was. I think I was thinking it was probably like overly negative more so than it probably should have been, but they probably didn't know that there were updates that were needed in order to get the applications to actually work on there. Yeah, so if you tried to open up like Alpha or something like that, like it didn't work. Like you try to save something, it won't save. Like there were like missing, like core missing functionality from it.
Ooh. I think we just booted. We went to the live system and I do my classic test on X to make sure it's actually working. I run XSize and I play around with it for a good hour or so. And so that's the only thing I ran. I was like, well, it looks like it works. So what I'm hearing you say is that we gave it a clean bill of health because we didn't check all the nooks and crannies that we should have. Not even nooks and crannies, just didn't check other functions and so, they might have not worked.
Okay, so the reason that, I can actually tell you why they released like basically a beta version of Linspire 5 and then they applied the updates later. It had to do with like getting the CDs pressed and it was going to be like 6 months to press them or something. And so they had to order it like 6 months before it was actually released. So none of the product was finished yet when they actually made the CDs. And those boxes were actually, there wasn't really any money made on that. It was like $100 a box basically to like have all that stuff put together. So like there wasn't money being made on that, even though that's what it would like sell for. Like that was literally like what it was being sold to Best Buy and all these, you know, retailers.
Crazy.
For. Yeah.
Why is it so much to build that box? It's just got some documents and the CD in there, right?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Well, I mean, I think there was a book in the box, if I recall correctly. But it was expensive, and
you can't make money doing that.
No,
it's not even. I won't make it up on margins. There's no margins.
Yeah,
there's no volume.
Yep. So. Yep. Well, right. So, I mean, the objective was not to make money. That was to kind of get it out there. That was the reason that there was a box done up and so on. But the reality is, they would have been much better off just giving away CDs, press CDs, just the CD.
Like AOL, just mailing them out to people.
Right. Exactly. That would have been the cheap marketing
approach.
Bombing
the neighborhood. Yeah. Oh, so, he got one.
I pulled the other two copies because I have four copies because you know the kind of person I am.
Well, we need to have a fire then.
So what I can tell you is the blue box came with 5.0.11. The green box also was 5.0.11. The one that's like just a standard DVD holder case thing came with 5.0.59.
Okay.
And then I have a 4.5 copy as well.
Yeah, but 4.5 was terrible. I mean, it was closer to 5.0 in terms of like them prior releases of Linspire, or when it was called Lindos, but it was definitely not polished. Linspire 5, they actually got things polished and working pretty well. Again, with the updates, not with the install media. But yeah, I don't even, you'd probably have to, if you got a 5.1 disc, you probably, most of that stuff would work, I suspect, if you really wanted to review, you know, like L Photo and L Tunes, and I don't even know what else was there. It was basically a clone of the Max, whatever.
Yeah,
Max.
Oh, what a shame. We don't have one of those.
Yeah,
what
I don't shame. Have a 5.0 or 5.1. I don't have a 6.0, and I don't have an original actual Lindos release. The only releases I have were after they sued and rebranded.
So I have, I definitely have I probably have a ton of different versions of Linspire, but they were burnt discs, not the, I mean, I have a retail box, I think unopened even, but I don't, most of my versions are like, actually, I probably have versions that you can't even, I'm probably one of the few people who actually has versions exactly. Nobody else ever got.
I need to get archives off either one of these days.
Yeah. But that's because I had access to like all the internal stuff. So I have like each day there was a new, like, I don't know if it was each day, but it was, I forget exactly what it was. I know they did there was you had to wait like overnight if you published something, because at the time everything was being built on like Unix boxes, and yeah, it was took for super long for everything to build. But I mean, you could build it yourself on your own machine, but if you're trying to push it out and then make sure it actually worked, you had to wait like overnight. It was so frustrating, because like during the day when it was, stuff was going on, there was just too many other people using it and doing it, and their whole processes were really, really frustrating as a developer.
Just add up to the list of all the other frustrating things, huh?
That would be really fascinating to dig through all the different things, because I know I talked to Jeff about this. Like, that's one of the things that I love, is kind of that software archaeology thing of taking a version and actually then seeing what did they actually change between the different versions? Like, what actually got updated? What actually got fixed?
You don't do this with just software, also, right? Because there's some other fields where you do this too.
Yeah.
There were some nice things that Linspire 5 had that before anybody else. I don't know if you guys are familiar with like the live CD technology, you know, as opposed to installing individual packages, cut down the install time like drastically.
Yeah. And it worked great. I mean, yeah. It worked great in our demo last year.
Yeah, and they were doing, they were like, although they were a little too soon to adopt it, but, and then of course the guy got imprisoned. Riser, I don't know if anybody who knows remembers Hans Riser, Riser yep. FS, yeah, they adopted that like just before he got like thrown in a cage. So, bad timing.
Congratulations at the bad timing award.
And there was a bug with like a data corruption issue. So it was like really bad to adopt that in the end for them. But I don't know if that was adopted in 5.0. That might have been adopted in like 6.0 or something like that. But it was just like, I'm always one of those people who, let's not adopt the latest and greatest technology until we know it's going to work. And there were definitely some things I wouldn't have done that they did. So
I still build all my systems on EXT4. I know BetterFS is out there, ZFS is like hardcore.
Yeah, me too.
But I still, EXT4 has never let me down. It even gets through like situations where I think, surely this will not, FSEK will not fix this. And then imagine it comes up the other side clean, almost without asking me questions. It just fixed it. And I'm like, and I think I'll just keep using that until it fails me.
At the end of the day, extension 4 works because it's been well tested. It's been around a long time, and all the tools are going to support it really well. There are some cool features with some other newer file systems, but you know, at the end of the day, you might want to wait until they've been thoroughly tested by everybody else before you adopt them. And the reality is, extension 4 still works just fine for your average user. So
there's a lot of upside to DFS, though. I'll say that.
As a file system, you have one job. You know,
losing data ain't yeah, exactly. that's a big showstopper if you ask me. And I'm always amazed when companies go and they adopt stuff that's like, it's not ready for prime time. Why are you guys using this or releasing it? And it's a business thing, you know. It's like, it's marketing, it's flashy, and then people go out and they run out and they all, you know, buy it or try it or whatever, and it's like, and then they crash and burn, and it's like, I'd rather just get something stable that works and, you know, isn't going to fail on me than to be. And I think, you know, what's funny is I think there's the people who play with Linux, and then there's the people who like use Linux for real. And it's just like kind of two different groups, you know. That's what my experience
is. Do you happen to know much about the partnership that was going on with Canonical? Because that always stood out as odd to me, because
Canonical and Linspire?
Kind of competition.
Canonical and
Linspire, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know a whole lot about it. What's the question?
Well, just anything, because like I never knew what the what the goal was, and they were both kind of targeting the same market, and it seemed like, what do you guys do?
So like, the idea, I think if I recall correctly, the idea was basically to move away from a distribution model and move towards a, honestly, it's actually what Canonical is doing today. It's basically snaps.
Okay.
It just snaps, but it would have happened in 2007 time period, not 2021 time period. And yeah, it was basically just taking CNR and porting it to not just Canonical, but porting it across the various distributions that existed, so that, you know, as you know, snaps will work pretty much on anything. Well, that's that's basically the concept of it. So, and they were ahead of the time in some respects, I think. I don't necessarily think I'm not a big fan of snaps, to be honest. But they were ahead of the time. And actually, the whole idea behind snaps actually goes back to like the late 90s, I think, early 2000s probably. So it's actually been around a long time. It just wasn't it wasn't called snaps, and snaps specifically, it wasn't. But in terms of bundling all the libraries needed for a particular package so that they would run on different distributions, that was definitely around. I'm trying to think what it was called, some of the earlier stuff. I think it was called Click. K-L-I-K was one of them anyway. And yeah, at least one of you guys actually recall something of this. And it didn't work that particularly well, to be honest, but it was definitely the precursor to Snaps and Flatpak and, you know, all of these newer and App Image, all the newer stuff that they're doing now. So
yeah, my first doing exposure around... Go ahead, Jeff.
You go ahead, JP.
Okay. My first exposure to that was through Puppy Linux, with the way that they were doing it with Squash File System as applications, as a bundle.
Oh, now, yeah, I remember
that. Through AOFS. So it would only work because obviously it was just the binaries from, like, if it was a Debian-based Puppy or a Slackware-based Puppy, it was the binaries and the libraries from that parent distribution that were just bundled together into the Squash file system that you could load and unload as you needed. It wasn't cross-platform in that way and cross-distribution in that way, but it still kind of gave you the, I need this program to work. I can download one file, I can double click it, it's now installed, I can use it, and when I want to uninstall it, I just double click it, and now it's uninstalled.
Yep.
That's always been a classic feature of OS X. Back in when Apple was making a transition from Power architecture to Intel architecture, they developed something similar, other than 0304, somewhere like that, I think. They call them fat binaries.
Was that?
Those were multiple copies of the same code compiled for the different architectures, and also the libraries and resources needed, all put into one package, and the package itself is called the application. So they've been doing that for a long time.
Did that predate Click? Because I think there was Linux. I don't recall if that was predate. And I'm not familiar with the Apple Mac stuff. And I know Apple often copies stuff in the Linux world. So I don't remember. Do you guys remember if that was pre or post?
I don't, actually.
I just know that Apple copies everyone and is like, look at this thing we created.
No. Yeah. This is one of these things where I always think back and I'm like, oh yeah, Linspire did this, or Lins, or something else. Debian did that back in the early 90s, and it's like, oh, you guys are just adopting this now in 2018 or 14 or whatever it is that it is currently.
But because it's done by Apple, it is now blessed, right?
Right.
And it's holy and divine.
Right, right, right.
Because it came from Apple.
Right. I remember like Netcast, and all of a sudden they started becoming podcasts. It's like, dude, this has been around forever. Why are we calling it something different? Yeah.
But it's on an iPod.
Right? I know, right?
It's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're doing a podcast. Unfortunately, the name's still stuck with us.
For the longest time,
it's just a label now, I think.
For the longest time, it is. But for the longest time, I refused to use the word podcast. Because I'm like, dude, it's been around since the 90s. How can we go and start calling it, you know, why do that? All you're doing is taking Apple and using Apple stuff, terminology. But, I don't
share a lot of similarities there. It seems like I kind of boycott things because I've seen that before. You're stealing that. I'm not touching that. Well, and I kind of did it for podcasts for a long time. Like, I'm not gonna use it. I'm not gonna use the term.
Yeah,
I would just listen to the RSS feed, which is effectively in the background doing the podcast.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of the word steal. So I don't think it's stealing, but if reality is, yeah, right. Like, it's still like one of these things where it's like it's annoying to see like some company getting credit for something that they had nothing to do with. They didn't even buy it. Like they didn't even buy the technology. It's just like they just changed the terminology for their own, you know, benefit or whatever. But yeah, netcast probably isn't the word I was looking for anyway. Probably just MP3, right? Like,
yeah, that's what we just called it. Yeah, you had a show and you were delivering your content by MP3.
Yeah,
and then someone figured out we can deliver it by RSS, have a feed trying to show everything through, and thus the podcast without the name podcast was born. Pretty much.
Yep.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting question for you, Chris. If you had a time machine and you could go back and you could take over Linspire, what would you have done, or what would you now that you've seen the whole saga go haywire, go sideways, and be just a bad thing? How would you have run it so that it would have been a good thing?
I would have kept like a couple of things that they did probably.
Okay.
I you know, that's always a good question. I don't know exactly, but certainly the click and run, the concept, not necessarily the way it was implemented, but the concept,
right.
I think worked because it was, I mean, the whole point of that was to make it easy enough for, you know, anybody to, you know, install applications. And that was one of the things where it's like opening up a terminal and running apt-get is not going to work for mom and dad. So, you know, or grandma or whatever. And so that's probably the core thing, that I liked. Some of the other things were, it was a lot. They were one of the first distributions to use the I'm trying to think what it was called. I think, it was Cloop, I think, wasn't it? CLOOP?
I don't know. Wrong.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Canopics? Or am I thinking of a different distribution? Clauses thing. Germany.
Yeah, I'm not placing
what it would be. Sorry. Anyway,
don't mean to leave you hanging like that. It just—it's not going.
I think it's Canopics, isn't it? Isn't it like Kanopix or something?
That's the live system.
Yeah. It's like the live system that started it all. There was technically a distribution before that was using something similar. But they're the ones who came up with it basically.
They did all the early engineering to make it work.
I'm sorry, guys. I was like working on like software development and putting distributions together like before Linspire, and so like there's a lot of stuff that I'm familiar with. It goes back to like the early 2000s time period, and even earlier in some cases, that you wouldn't know about as like just a user. So
I just looked it up. Canopics,
it's before it was before like AUS.
It was developed by Linux consultant Klaus Knopper.
Knopper. Yeah, that's his name. I think I said it wrong earlier, but yeah, I'm sorry, it's been a while. I haven't used it or
it's been a few years.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
I think we can give you a pass on that, honestly.
Yeah. It was great stuff though. I was looking for that back in like 2000 time, like literally like 2000 was the year probably, and maybe 2001. And it was probably like 2001, or maybe it was 2002, as late as that. And they're just it was before he did that. And there was literally one distribution, and it wasn't a distribution, it was a demo CD basically that had this. And when he came out with that that first version basically, I was so on top of that. That was the greatest thing since sliced bread, to be able to run an operating system from CD with everything installed, and then it installs in like 5 minutes as opposed to 45 minutes. There's a lot of things like that. I definitely think that's, you know, Linspire was smart to adopt. And they were early in the game to adopt some of that stuff as well. But it was something that was well tested, and it wasn't as, you know, finicky as like, I don't know, Riser FS was. Yeah. So
I think that technology, the run live on a CD, probably had more to do with Linux's advancement and growth in the 2000s, even 2010. Because people could try the system casually without affecting their home system. They didn't need to install anything to get a feel for what Linux could do. So when you have nothing to lose because you're not going to save anything, you could try anything. You could destroy the system. You could go, oops, I did something. Oh, I guess I'll just reboot and get back into my system again. And I think that really contributed a lot to a lot of people picking up Linux, perhaps even on their own, trying it out and finding, oh, I kind of actually like this. Because it didn't cost anything on the system.
It was one
and the benefit that you can actually check your hardware to see if it works before you go through the process of installing and then going, oh, wow, I just spent an hour of my life and I can't do anything.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those things that made things a lot easier to use, too. Some of the auto configuration was, you know, it was first introduced in a real distribution with Linspire, actually. There was the live disk, and you could technically install that, but it wasn't intended to be an installed distribution prior to that. So it was, yeah, Linspire definitely did some things that were like, this is smart. But there were, but actually that, even that live CD stuff, actually, that actually goes back, not with Linux, but that actually predates Linux. So technically, you can't credit, like, Linux, and I'm putting Linux in quotes here, but you can't really say that that was a Linux development, but it was still something that was very cool and very awesome that the Linux world adopted. I mean, they developed it, but it was that implementation that they developed, not the concept, basically. So,
well, Chris, this has been really enjoyable to kind of just chat back and forth about the old days of Windows and Linspire, because it's always been something that I've had a curiosity about. And there's not much information out there. A lot of the old websites that did have information are gone now. So being able to talk with somebody who had firsthand knowledge is really great. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. And I feel very validated for all of my negative opinions that you continue to taunt me about. You know, I had some vague memories of things and some strong memories of some experiences that I had in trying it out or watching someone try it out. And to have Chris come in here and give us the background on it. That's exactly what I remember.
Some of their criticisms, totally valid. They fixed a lot of the criticisms. They still made a lot of mistakes that people don't even recognize or know about. And yeah, it was one of these things that's just like, you had to be there at the time to really, to know, you know, what was going on. And you had to kind of really, some of the stuff you had to be really behind the scenes to even know about, you know, as to why things were and why things weren't the way they were. So.
And at the end of the day, even if it was a disaster, it led you to create Think Penguin, which has been a success.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it was still a good journey. For those that are looking for hardware that is, you know, cares about being open and will respect, you know, your rights, check out Think Penguin. Chris does a fantastic job there. They've got really good stuff. I will have links to Think Penguin in the show notes. And whenever we're able to go back to conferences again, if you ever see a Think Penguin booth at a conference, go over and say hi to Chris. He's a great guy. Chris, thanks again.
Thank you very much, Chris.
All right. Have a great day, everybody.
All righty. And stop. And then...